I'm going to call the meeting to order this morning, or this afternoon, rather, the Ag Committee. This meeting will be held in accordance with House Rule 10.01, which is posted online. Roll call, Mr. Smith, please.
All right, Chair Sundin is present. Vang, not here yet. Anderson.
Present.
Anderson present. Burkle.
Present.
Burkle present. Eklund.
Present.
Eklund present. Hansen-R.
Hansen-R present.
Hansen-J.
Hansen-J present.
Hansen-J present. Cleavorn. Not here yet. Lippert.
Present.
Lippert present. Lewitt.
Lewitt present.
Lewitt present. Miller.
Present.
Miller present. Nelson.
Present.
Nelson present. Thompson.
Present.
Thompson present. We do have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
Okay, seeing there is a quorum, Representative Nelson N., would you offer a motion to approve the minutes of the previous meeting?
Yes, I'll move the minutes of the previous meeting.
Okay. Any questions or corrections on those minutes? Okay, hearing none, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing no objection, the minutes are adopted. We're going to focus on two issues today, the Farmer Lender Mediation and Rural Finance Authority, both important tools available to Minnesota farmers and lenders. We will have an overview from the Farmer Lender Mediation Program, then hear our first bill of the session on that same topic. From the Farmer Lender Mediation Program presentation, it should last about 20 minutes, and we will hear from Mary Nell Chrysler, the statewide mediation coordinator, University of UMN Extension. There is a one-page handout that was sent to members and was posted. Welcome, Ms. Chrysler. Please begin.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and members of the committee. I'm Mary Nell Chrysler, Director of the Farmer Lender Mediation Program. The Farmer Lender Mediation Program helps farmers and lenders work out solutions for managing agricultural debt. Farmer Lender Mediation is part of a USDA-certified state agricultural mediation program that gives farmers and their creditors the opportunity to renegotiate, restructure, and or resolve farm debt. It is under a national program, the Coalition of American Accredited Mediation Programs, we call it CAMP, reauthorized as part of the recent federal farm bill. The Minnesota program has a sunset and is scheduled to expire June 30th of 2022. This is how it works. A creditor with the intent of enforcing collection on agricultural debt of more than $15,000 secured by agricultural property or 60 acres must offer the option of mediation before proceeding with foreclosure, repossession, cancellation of a contract, or collection of a judgment. That is when the University of Minnesota Extension gets involved with a team of mediators and financial analysts. If farmers choose to take the advantage of mediation, the first step is an orientation meeting. The farmer, creditor, financial analyst, and the mediator meet to explain the process and to determine if financial information is needed. Nancy, Successful mediation requires two things: neutrality on the part of the mediator and compromise on both the parts of the debtor and creditor. The current situation is not working for either the debtor or the creditor. Farmers must change their operation to make it profitable. That means to increase income, restructure intermediate debt to long-term debt, or liquidate assets. Creditors may need to restructure debt and security or reschedule loan payments. The mediator leads and manages discussions as a neutral party without making decisions or judgments. The mediator does not take sides or decide how the dispute should be resolved. If the mediation does not resolve in an agreement after 90 days, the parties are free to pursue whatever course of action is available to them, most often with a clear understanding of the facts, the issues, and the positions of the other parties. The University of Minnesota Extension manages the process as part of a commitment to agriculture and rural communities. The program has proven to be an economic asset. Now, if you see on your screen, this is the executive summary for last year. We go the fiscal year, so we of the federal. So this is October 1st of 2019 through September of 2020. And I'm just going to highlight through here. I'm not going to read it all to you, but if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer at the end, if I know the answer, of course. And in 2020, the fiscal year, we had 3,160 mediation notices that were received from creditors. Of those, we had 1,353 notices that waived mediation. The rest of them went into mediation. You can read those two paragraphs in your handout. There was an estimated nearly 30,000 contacts consisting of participants in mediation or others interested in the program. We have a staff, a full-time equivalency of 5, including 6 part-time mediators, 2 part-time financial analysts, 2 part-time administrative assistants, and a full-time program director. The additional staff involved includes the principal investigator for the USDA grant and administrative grant, financial, and legal support from various university staff. Based on the Minnesota Agricultural Statistics Districts, there you can see in your districts where the mediations actually came out of in descending orders central. And a lot of that would be your dairy and your cattle. The types of creditors sending out the initial notice of mediation. This year, the banks took first place with 52% came from banks. Then Farm Credit Services and all of their departments that we have them in Wisconsin, in Omaha, Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota. So that is a conglomeration of all of them. The total amount of the debt reported and addressed during mediation sessions was about $388 million. And there you have a breakdown of how much for each entity. The primary commodity, it surprised me. I thought dairy and hogs would be higher, but they weren't. And it was still crop because we had too much rain in some spots and we didn't have enough rain in spots in the state. The type is still sole proprietors of 62%. Many of the partnerships and the corporations are families that have decided for business purposes to use partnerships and corporations. I'm going to read this last one. The average farm debtor recorded in mediation, a 60-year-old sole proprietor ranging in age from 22 to 100. And the 100-year-old was still actively farming, who had owned the land for 33 years, owning 547 acres. The average agricultural debt was approximately $246,000, the income, non-farm income of $37,000 about, and the median family living expenses of $38,675. Okay. You can take that down. Thank you. The existing timeline in the state statute is 90 days to conduct mediation. However, with the notifications required under the state statute, we end up really having 60 days for mediation sessions. We often find that that is not enough time to execute a final agreement. Extending the timeline of mediation would give farmers and lenders more time to reach a mutually beneficial plan for managing debt. We are finding that at this time of uncertainty with COVID-19, the financial pain and intensity felt by many producers and creditors may not be reflected in the number of mediation default notices. 2020 has seen substantial market interruptions due to COVID-19 pandemic. The outbreak brings more uncertainty regarding prices, government programs, and the broader economy. Many producers are selling assets, liquidating the business, tightening family living expenses, and depending more on non-farm income with health insurance benefits. We hear tragic stories daily from farmers, financial advisors, advocates, and mediators. The stress level in agriculture is high. Many producers never thought that they would be in a financial crisis. There are more divorces, orders for protection, family division, and strife, and health situations. It is difficult working with the complex financial issues and help individuals make life-changing decisions with the amount of stress that they are experiencing. This extension of timeline is warranted given the unprecedented challenges farmers and lenders are facing. We are often waiting for farmers, lenders, and other participants to recover from COVID-19. I recently had a case where the situation was the cattle trucker had COVID-19 and so did all of his family who drove trucks. So the producer could not ship cattle. Another case, the buyer of the real estate had COVID-19. We had an attorney out with it, several loan officers. One producer had a heart attack, which I'm sure was stressfully related. All of this is happening more often than we would expect. Most of this is beyond human control. It takes longer to complete many things, the exchange and the completion of financial information, long-term financial planning, obtain purchase agreements, conduct land surveys, get the abstracts updated, loan applications to another lender, work with the USDA agencies, Farm Service Agency. Processing loan applications is a long period of time. Waiting for interpretation and clarification of USDA programs. Consulting with legal counsel. Listing land for sale. Contacting machinery auction companies. Selling and shipping livestock. Consulting and planning for tax ramifications with a liquidation. Currently, we are using conference calls and sometimes Zoom to hold meetings. It is difficult to find a meeting room, even if we did hold in-person meetings. This extension of the timeline will hopefully allow time to resume face-to-face mediations and at some point in the future. As I said, successful mediation requires two things: neutrality on the part of the mediator, compromise on both the part of the debtor and the creditor. Farmers may need to change their operation to make it profitable, reorganize debt, increase income, or liquidate assets. Creditors may need to restructure debt, amortize loans, update security agreements, or reschedule loan payments. Are there questions?
Thank you, Ms. Braisler. Are there any questions from the members for the testifier today? Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Madam, Mr. Chair. Ms. Braisler, thank you for your presentation, and also thanks for the important work you do in this program. I just have to ask you a question in that to get your opinion as to whether we're going about this the right way. This would be the third extension that has been requested in the program. And we talked about this back last December, and it didn't get done. Now we're out into the new year. And you also mentioned that the 90-day window may not be long enough time to get all of the background work and such completed that you talked about, such as looking up abstracts, things like that. So in your opinion, would it be better to look at making that 90-day period longer so everybody would have the same conditions, the same rules to follow, rather than trying to do these kind of ad hoc extensions? And we're going to have kind of a donut hole here from those that whose timeline ended in December and January until this bill may ever get passed. Just your thoughts on how we could make this system better and not have to do these extensions all the time, Ms. Preisler.
Ms. Preisler, a response?
Chair Sundin and Representative Anderson. Yes, 90 days has never been long enough. I've been doing this since 1986, since it started. It has never been long enough. However, we do have that if we have an agreement before 90 days, we can stop the mediation. So really, if we come to an agreement, we're done with mediation. It doesn't run the 90 days. We really haven't run into this. The pandemic just brought it to a head. I think that's what has happened here. It brought it to a head that we have never had enough time. And so if we could add this on for right now, or do we want to wait and address this again in 2022 when the bill is up, or do we want to address it right now? That is certainly not a decision of mine. I will do whatever you tell me to do.
Thank you. Representative John Thompson, we have time for one more question, and you would be the asking the question. Go ahead, Representative Thompson.
Chair, thank you so much. Ms. McNeil, thank you for the work that you do in mediation. I do know that mediation solves a lot of problems. Community Mediation Minnesota does a lot of work with the Office of Dispute Resolution. Chair Sundin, Representative Anderson asked the question that I wanted to ask with regard to the timeline, because I know a lot of times, COVID also has caused some problems that we didn't cause ourselves. And so I do know that this is important work. Needs to be done. We solve a lot of our problems through mediation and conflict resolution and trying to get things done. I was just wondering the same thing that Representative Anderson was wondering, is the 90 days, like, is that long enough? And I think he's asked that question, but I also just want to say thank you to Mr. Kinnear for the work that she's done.
Any response, Ms. Preisler?
Chair Sundin and Representative Thompson. The problem with 90 days is really isn't 90 days. It comes down to 60 days, because we have 30 days in which to hold an orientation session, which is to help prepare the debtors so that they're coming in with financial information. In the ideal world, we have all that financial information before the initial session, which has to be within 30 days of the clients requesting mediation. So now we have 60 days in order to make life decisions that are so critical. And that's really not enough time.
Thank you, Ms. Preisler. We'll go to Representative D.L. Lewick for a quick question and hopefully a quick answer.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. Fairly quick. Recognize we're on a, your date is on a federal fiscal year. Do you have an idea right now today how many people would be affected by this bill that are in mediation and would gain an extension out of this?
Chair Sundin and Representative, I'm sorry, I didn't get your last name.
Lewick.
Lewick, okay. There you are. All right. We keep a daily log of who's in mediation, And also we keep a daily, a long Excel sheet. So we would know exactly the date that you decide to put the 60 days on or 45 days or whatever it is. We will need to add that onto the existing cases. And that's what we need clarified before we get the whole thing done. We need to know, does that go on to the existing cases that their timeline is still within the 90 days? Or does that go to those also that we have them extending out by mutual agreement? Does that count? Because I'm sure David with Pioneer Bank would like that clarified also, because we need to know exactly where do we put these extra days? How do we put them? We will do it, as I say, we will do exactly what the legislature says to do.
Thank you very much. Is there a follow-up, Representative Luke?
Yes, Chair, maybe I didn't state the question. How many farmers right now are in mediation that would be impacted by this bill?
Ms. Preissler.
Chair Sundin and Representative Luke, I could have that information for you, but I would say that we're looking within the people that are in mediation and those that are waiting 14 days and the new notices, we have around 700.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. That's probably it for questions to Ms. Preissler. And we'll be moving on now to House File 80. Representative Lippert's bill. It was introduced earlier this month. There's no Senate companion at this point. We'll take about 20 minutes on this bill. And that'll include the amendments and discussion. So let's move clearly. We have testifiers as well. There's no fiscal note posted. So Representative Lippert, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I move House File 80. I also have an author's amendment that I'd like to move to get the bill in the shape I want.
Thank you, Representative Lippert. This bill will be laid over for future consideration. So to your bill.
First, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the adoption of the A1 amendment. So this amendment just simply puts an end date to the 60-day extension, and that end date is October 1st of 2021.
Okay. Any further explanation on that?
No, it's just filling in the dots in the original legislation at the end of the bill.
Okay, seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, hearing none, the motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Lippert, go ahead with your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As COVID-19 started unfolding in Minnesota in 2020, we extended farmer lender mediation by 60 days on April 14th. And then as packing plants increasingly started shutting down, we extended farmer lender mediation until December 1st. And we did that May 16th. We wanted to put a pause on potentially farm-ending decisions when so much about a farmer's financial situation was unknown for both farmers and lenders. Fed relief came through for farmers over the summer, and this fall prices for grain improved, but many farmers needed to sell grain before the prices had gone up. Farm advocates are still anticipating more foreclosures and bankruptcies. Now that we're past December 1st and the farmer-lender mediation process has resumed, as Mary Preissler noted in her presentation, there are many ways that COVID is still slowing the farmer lender mediation process down for farmers. So besides people getting sick with COVID, but people are working remotely, many things just take longer. Courthouses aren't functioning normally and might take longer to get records on land boundaries. The surveyor can be delayed. Attorneys are working from home, might not have access to a file. Just last week, there was an advocate who couldn't read the balance sheet a farmer had sent because of a technical problem. And the meeting was scratched until they could get that document, and it'll take a week until everyone could be brought together again. And if they'd had that meeting in person, they wouldn't have lost that week. So as legislators, I think we can understand this general problem. our normal processes in the House are backed up and taking longer because staff and all of us are doing work remotely. And it just takes longer to get some things done, especially as we're needing to process important paperwork. So we should take these challenges of working remotely in the midst of a global pandemic into account and provide a little more time for farmers and lenders to get to an agreement that works. So this bill extends the mediation time frame by 60 days, from 90 days to 150 days. And the extension will last until October 1st, when we expect the vaccine to have been distributed and work to be returning more towards normal. There's still a deadline here that will drive movement to a resolution, but more of a cushion is built in so that the farmer isn't penalized for factors that are outside of his or her control. And I'll turn now to a few testifiers who would like to comment on the bill as well. I believe the first is Ms. Connie Dykes.
Ms. Dykes, would you please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Sundin and all the members of the committee. I'm a farm advocate, and I've been with the Department of Ag since the Farm Advocate Program started. And I work, well, I'll introduce a little bit more of myself. I'm a farmer with my husband and my two sons, and we farm in Wabasha and Goodhue counties in southeast Minnesota. And I work with 9 other advocates. We're seeing a lot of stress like Mary Nell and Representative Lippert said, so I won't expand on that. I know the time is short, but I certainly do support getting another 60 days because of everything that they both had said, because, you know, we got the timelines, and if you do finally come to a agreement, that kind of takes a lot of time. You have to do appraisals. They're backed up. It's just all the things that they already explained. I'm not going to expand on that anymore, but I guess one thing I'd like to say, I think 60 days more would be like a Hail Mary process, you know, a pass at the end, because sometimes when you're close to getting it, or you can get some family to come in and help refinance, or, you know, all these things really do help with the process. And I really do think we need another 60 day, or like the other Representative Anderson said, maybe we should change it to a longer time. I mean, there's some other things that I do think need to be addressed in the mediation program too, but not at this time. If we can get this going, because it just makes it impossible. Anything in the courts takes forever. You know, there's one client that I have had, he just got out of a mediation and immediately the bank foreclosed and immediately sent out the replevin for the machinery and the grain. They have 21 days to answer this, but then that takes another lengthy time. So it gets into the court systems too to salvage the farm. And like Mary Nell addressed, that is, you know, 60 years old is the average. Well, you know, what do they do at that time in their life? I mean, there's no way to start a new life. So if we can just work some things out, I really am for that. And it, you know, time really does help. So I guess sure. That's probably all I can say, because it's a very stressful time. And with the COVID, it really extends the time that we can even get together with our clients to do financials. It just makes that, first of all, they contact us after they get the mediation notice, and then it takes a long time to pull numbers together back and forth on the internet, and because you can't meet with people. So this would really help, I think, too. So
thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much, Connie Dykes. We have one quick question from Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. I would prefer to ask my question after we've heard all the testifiers, if that would be all right.
That's perfect. Thank you. Next up, we have Gary Wordish with the Minnesota Farmers Union. Gary Wordish, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin and committee members. I'm Gary Wordish. I'm president of the Minnesota Farmers Union. Farmers Union, we're a grassroots organization that advocates for farmers and rural communities since 1918 in the state of Minnesota. I'll just add on to a little bit that I want to go with, you know, Connie and Mary Nell expressed a lot of the issues with stress that are affected not only with, not only the issues of the stress of not being able to make your payments or commitments, but COVID too. But the one thing I just want to say, first of all, I'd like to thank you, committee and the legislature, for passing the past extensions that you did last year with Mary Nell cited an 89% mediation successful rate. That extensions more than likely help keep a few more people on the farm. And it in effect helped the bankers out too. Work, you know, most of them are situations where the banker and the farmer both come up with a good solution, or else in that, you know, it's in everybody's best interest. The one thing that wasn't mentioned, a lot of times if you can come up with a successful mediation, it prevents the farmer from having to declare a bankruptcy. Connie just mentioned somebody had to declare bankruptcy. When bankruptcy is declared, the ones that get hurt, not only the farmer, but a lot of times it'll be the Main Street businessmen that get hurt, or businesses that get hurt too. The bankers are more than likely secure. They're still going to get whatever security they have. They're still going to retain that in the first lien position through a bankruptcy. So the ones that really get hurt are the Main Streets. You know, I think any of us can, you drive down our small towns, you can see there's Main Street is struggling hard enough, and it should be everyone's best interest to keep as many farmers on the farm as we possibly can. And the other thing is the extension, but granted an extension, it doesn't take anything away from the banker. You know, as I said, his position is still secured. It just allows more time to work through a very difficult position. And I guess if that, you know, we would ask for that, you consider granting an extension just for everybody's benefit. And it's, in the end, it's everybody's best interest.
Thank you, Mr. Wordish. Appreciate your input. Are there any quick questions for the Farmers Union?
Chairman Sunin, I did hear this weekend from a person that is in mediation, and he cited the example that it's not that he's having trouble hearing back from his bank, his attorney. His attorney made an offer to their attorney, and then he contacted his attorney, and his attorney said the bank's attorney still has not heard back from the bank. So it's not only always the farmer that's having a hard time. It's, you know, lenders are having a hard time too. So I just wanted to throw that out there. So it's not always the farmer's fault.
Thank you. Next up, we have Bonnie Hagen from Canton, Minnesota. She's with the Land Stewardship Project. She's a member leader. Bonnie Hagen, please.
Thank you. Are you able to hear me okay?
Terrific. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Our internet is unstable, so I'm going to be voice only. But Chair Representative Mike Sundin and committee members, thank you for making the time to listen to me. I'm Bonnie Haugen, grazing dairy farmer by Canton, Minnesota since 1993. Our grazing dairy farm will freshen about 175 cows this spring. We have grazing forages on our hilly 270 acres. Cows go to a fresh paddock after each milking. Our cows are outside all year, and in general, we have less income than a confinement dairy, but we also have less expenses. I believe that many of you heard me testify on the same issue last May, and thank you for the unanimous positive action that day. Because of that, many farmers and their families had less stress through the fall because of our votes, your votes extending the mediation period. And this was a help, especially after 5 years of other problems in our farming economic area. I am requesting that you vote again to extend the mediation period for Minnesota farmers. As similar to other previous testimony, time to fully assess the current situation, examine all options, and go through the communication channels that are important. The physical distancing keeps us safer, but it does complicate and lengthen effective communications. Often, when a person needs help the most, it is the most difficult to think clearly, and making those rushed decisions can be a negative for the farmer, banker, and the community. Last May, I shared that our net worth at the end of April was 60% less than January 1 of 2020. Our net worth has bounced back some, but not all. For instance, we took out some loans because of less milk income. In particular, the negative producer price differential really affected this farm. 1 month was a negative $9 per hundredweight. I had brought up a couple things from the report that was shown on the screen earlier, and one of them that I want to highlight still is that sole proprietors were 62% of the types of ownership structures that were affected in the mediations. And these are the small and medium-sized businesses that we can help, farmers like me and my neighbors. And further also, I want to just reiterate that the communication and planning required by mediation helps both the lender and borrower alike, as previous testifiers said, as well as Dan Miller, a fellow I've talked with. The pandemic is still here and likely will be for some more months. I ask you to allow more time for mediation for the farmers we have left. We ask for time, not money. I believe that farming is everybody's bread, butter, and water. If you could see me, I'd shake my water cup at you. Thank you for your time, and I hope you stay well.
Thank you, Ms. Hagen. Appreciate your testimony. Next up, we have David Krause from Pioneer Bank and the immediate past chair of the Minnesota Bankers Association. Mr. Krause, please.
Thank you, Chair and committee. As mentioned, I'm immediate past chair of the Minnesota Bankers Association. I'm the CEO of Pioneer Bank, a $725 million community bank. We have 9 locations throughout Watonwan, Nicollet, and Blue Earth counties. You can trace our roots back to the 1880s. The highest concentration of clients that we have as a bank today and have had at any point in our past has always been those engaged in ag production. Over the past 3 years, we've participated in farmer lender mediation with 8 borrowers. In each case, we were actively engaged in workout discussions before, during, and even after completing the process. I think one of the things that's important to note is we don't start the workout process when mediation is offered. Many times, many banks offer mediation almost as a last resort after all other negotiations, restructure attempts, and negotiations fail to reach a decision and or reach a conclusion. So and things like appraisals, abstracting those points, clearly those things take time, but many times, you know, abstract continuations, a lot of things are pieces of the puzzle that need to be completed after the basis of an agreement is actually reached. So in my experience, at least, and I've been a banker for 34 years, we've never lost a solution in mediation because we were waiting on appraisals or abstracting. One thing I just want to note, I think in my experience, the pandemic has actually improved the process. 3 of the 8 mediations I've referenced occurred since the pandemic began, and by eliminating the ability to meet in person actually resulted in better and more frequent discussions that moved the process forward. Finding an appropriate meeting place and allowing for travel time of all the people involved sometimes become obstacles. With telephone conferences, those obstacles have been removed, and more time and at less cost has been spent on fruitful negotiations. My biggest concern with the extension isn't all of the things that were referenced here already today. It has to do with the cases that are not going to come to a conclusion. And we had one specific case like that this summer. And mediation was used as a delay tactic. The borrower and their attorney were no longer interested in meeting. The mediator eventually stopped scheduling meetings, and the borrower and their attorney actually even objected and prevented us from conducting collateral inspections necessary for us to protect our collateral. That borrower took full advantage of the previous extension that was in place last year to delay our ability to avoid a financial loss. Our appeals to the mediator to end mediation fell on deaf ears, and our attorney explained pursuing remedies in court would be met with disappointment because court schedules were pushed back by the pandemic. We could only wait while we were prevented from making an accurate assessment of our collateral. Machinery depreciated in value. Crops and livestock were subject to market and quality risks. all the while legal expenses for both parties continued to mount. In the end, financial losses created by an extension can not only hurt creditors, but it can significantly reduce or eliminate any remaining financial equity for the farmer as well. Bankers are committed to reaching solutions. We wouldn't have been in existence for these 130 plus years without reaching good conclusions and decisions with our farm borrowers in good times and in bad. Banks demonstrate every day the ability to reach the same type of conclusions with borrowers in other industries as well. So I urge you to consider enhancing the meeting capabilities of mediators during this process. Invest in technology, allow for us to be more, to function better during this process, because oftentimes it's the mediator who has the problem connecting, not necessarily the bank or the attorney or even the borrower. We don't know how long this pandemic is going to last. I think we need to be cautious with any extensions we grant based on the existence of this pandemic for the precedent it can also set. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your comments. Representative Claiborne has a question for someone.
Thank you, Chair Sundin. I am an experienced mediator, and one of the concerns that I have is just exactly to the point that Mr. Krause spoke to. So much of the mediation experience is nonverbal. It is, you understand that someone is understanding or not understanding something by their physical presence. They're not saying maybe out loud, I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but a qualified and good mediator can see it in their body language. When we don't have that connectivity, when we don't have that face-to-face interaction, oftentimes a very important piece of the communication is lost. And that's what I was going to ask to the first testifier to kind of speak a little bit about what she and her mediators are experiencing in trying to do this over the internet and not in person. And then to the author of the bill, I would like to know more a little bit about what Representative Lippert is hearing in that same vein. There are so many places where the true communication can break down doing it. So how is COVID impacting that type of communication between the lender, the farmer, the mediator, and then I'll follow up after that. Thank you.
Connie Dykes, do you have a response?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do agree with, I don't remember the congressman's name, but I do agree the body language is very important. And if you can't sit face to face with someone, you know, they don't have the empathy that you do. You know, if you don't see or look into the person's eyes, there's no way to keep going, because I've been involved in quite a few of those mediations and over the years. And it seems to help if you can look somebody in the eye. I mean, it's just like anything else. So this does take a little while longer. And I guess I don't know how long we're going to have that we are going to be confined to doing it by phone. But I do not agree that it is better to meet on the phone. I do not agree with that.
Thank you. Is there a follow-up, Representative Cleaver?
Well, I was going to ask the woman who put the executive summary report together. I don't have her last name in front of me, so I so apologize. But if she's hearing that from other mediators as well, and if she has experienced this difficulty herself.
Okay, who wants to take that one?
I will.
Thank you, Ms. Preisler.
Chair Sundin and Representative Claiborne, I agree with you. It's very difficult to read body language on a telephone. However, we also have to, and that's what some of the things in some of the trainings we've had, because people use that also in tone of voice. And so we really go with that too. the tone of voice, and we're making the best of a situation that's been given to us. I agree, it would be easier to probably have face-to-face meetings, yes. We don't have the facilities to have them in. And like Mr. Krause was saying, you know, our budget is much better because we don't have the travel time. We don't have the travel expense. All of that is going to be added on to that producer. When you're in mediation with the bank, who do you think pays for the loan operation? Eventually, the borrower is going to pay for all of that. They're going to pay to have someone come all the way out from the Twin Cities. They're going to pay for things. So this, in a way, has saved borrowers a lot of money. And it also, I think that we might get to ahead of a situation faster. But I have been a trained mediator since 1986, and I use personality a great deal, and I use body language. I read body language all the time. And so that is a difficult thing to do, and read it in the voice instead.
Thank you very much. Representative Cleburne, if you have a quick follow-up, fine. If not, we've got a couple other questions.
Yeah, I'll just say, sorry, thank you, Representative Lippert. Thank you for jumping in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my conversations with both advocates and farmers who have participated, you know, what I've heard a few times is that the in-person dimension of farmer lender mediation has kind of been the secret sauce, or at least a part of it. And we're having having similar conversations in the mental health, behavioral health realm related to telehealth. But there's a lot that platform can do, but it can't do everything that you can do in an in-person meeting. And you know, as a pastor who's been in, you know, many one-on-one conversations with folks, there's just more that you pick up in face-to-face conversations. So that is a dimension of this conversation. I think there's no doubt about that.
Very good. Thank you. Representative John Thompson, you have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I had a question for David Krause in regard to his concerns. He had mentioned one of the instances that went bad for the bank. The borrower had not in good faith shown good faith, and I'm going to be fast. I do know that the pandemic and COVID-19 has affected not only farmers, but affected everybody everywhere, all across the nation. Do you agree that we need to help people in every way that we possibly can? I believe that we really need to help. This 60-day extension, that maybe I'm not understanding it well, but I really think would help if you added more time and gave people more time. And I only heard you mention one case, and I was wondering how many cases. I mean, you know, is it just one case that this happened, or you know, that you mentioned, or is it several cases? Because I've never heard of a bank like losing money ever in my life, as long as I've never, especially banks that loan money. I've never heard of you. And so I know that people need help all over the United States, and I think allowing a couple of days wouldn't hurt. So I'm just asking. Now, maybe I'm not understanding this much.
Thank you. A quick response, if you care to, Mr. Krause.
Representative Thompson, there was a lot in that question. I mean, clearly every bank in the country is required to maintain loan loss reserves, fund those reserves. Losing money on loans is a common practice. It happens to good banks, it happens to bad banks, and every bank in between. And fortunately for our bank, you know, we've had 3 or 8 cases in the last 3 years. We don't have a single active mediation case today. However, I run my bank, right? Just like every farmer runs their operation. And, I wouldn't even be here today testifying if the mediation statute had appropriate safeguards for taking care of the situation, for example, that we encountered just this last summer. We asked the mediator to continue to schedule meetings because we hadn't reached a discussion. He did. The borrower, the attorney, didn't show up. He finally refused to even schedule more meetings because he said it was pointless, that the borrower is not coming anyway. We simply had to wait for the December 1st date to come. This was back in July. And we had to wait until December 1st because when I asked my attorney, what can we do about it? The statute requires the borrower to mediate in good faith. Our attorney said, well, good luck getting a court date. We can't, you know, we'd have to go to court to get mediation stopped if the mediator won't do it. And so we just simply had to sit there for months while machinery depreciated in value, while we didn't know what was happening to the quality of the grain that was held as collateral on our loan, and we couldn't take any steps to do anything. We couldn't collect the loan because the mediation statute prevents it, and we couldn't talk to the borrower because they weren't willing. So that's the frustration I have. And those are rare cases, but I'm sure just like every farmer may be a rare case, they don't want their case to be the rare case that doesn't gain attention. I don't want to have those cases either. Banks are there. We're at the table all the time. We're at the table prior to mediation. We'll be at the table after mediation. And in fact, I also want to point out that it's not necessary. Mediation doesn't expire or end automatically at the end of the 90 days. I've been involved in several cases, and I'm sure Ms. Pressler knows this, that several times mediations are voluntarily extended because they're working towards a solution. And so just because the 90 days is out there doesn't mean mediation will end on that day. In most cases, it doesn't. It continues because both parties see the benefit of continuing discussion.
Thank you very much for those comments. Representative Paul Anderson, you have a question, and I'm going to ask you to be brief because we have a very important amendment coming up next.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification from either Ms. Pressler or Connie Dykes. One of you said you had no rooms that you could meet in. One of you said that you can't meet with people. Even with masking and social distancing, are you saying that you couldn't sit down, you know, across some kind of a conference table and meet one-on-one with people? Could you just clarify that for me, please?
I'll take that one.
Go ahead. Thank you, Ms. President.
Okay. Chair Sundin and Representative Anderson. There is a policy with the University of Minnesota Extension. And part of it, and it is because of COVID. We don't want to be, and we are not allowed to have sessions of mediation. So it is a policy through the university, which is the instrument that implements this program. We are following their policy. So that's where that policy comes from. They have extended it now, I believe, out until the last of June, where they're not having any face-to-face meetings.
Anything further, Representative Anderson?
No.
Okay, thank you. We can move on to our second amendment for the bill. Representative Anderson, would you like to move your amendment?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A2 amendment, which simply decreases that 60-day time extension down to 45 days. And again, my concern, and we talked about this back in December when we also worked on this, that there was a lot of concern expressed by lenders and also by some folks in the Senate that when you get out into the wintertime, you're trying to finish up last year's operating loan, and then you start looking into next year's operating situation. So back in December, we talked about an extension through the middle of February, maybe to March 1st. And now we're out at the end of January, and this bill is still having its first hearing. And what's really troubling is that there's no companion bill to this. So there's no bill right now in the Senate. So there's really no completion date or execution date for this bill. And I'm thinking that by lowering that 60-day window down to 45 days, it would give it a better chance of picking up more support. And I think any extension is noteworthy, and 45 days, which is a month and a half, would allow additional time to get some of this work done. So, Mr. Chair, that's what my amendment would do.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Lippert, any response to the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate Representative Anderson's amendment. I do think, you know, as we heard through multiple testifiers today, there are many, many different factors that can slow this process down. And so I do think 60 days is appropriate. It doesn't stop farmers and lenders from getting done earlier than that, but there still is a deadline in place that's driving the process to completion. So I still favor 60 days and am not in favor of the amendment.
Any further comments on the A2 amendment? Here, now we can put this to a vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 All in favor of no?
No.
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 Okay, I no. can't determine no. that. Oh, we have more no's. Thank you. So the amendment is not adopted, and so that motion does not prevail. And Representative Lippert, at this point, I'm going to remind everyone that I will lay House File 80 as amended over for further consideration. Any final comments on the bill, Representative Lippert?
I just want to thank the chair, thank the committee and testifiers for taking time today. I think this, you know, it's an important issue. We want to make sure that we're giving farmers the time they need and trying to help farmers stay on the farm if at all possible. So I just want to thank everyone for their time today.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Lippert and company. We have a presentation from the Rural Finance Authority and we've got about 20 minutes delegated for that. And we have Mr. Matt McNivitt, the RFA supervisor. Welcome to the committee, please.
Thank you, Chair Sundin, members. Matt McDevitt, I'm the Ag Finance Supervisor for the Rural Finance Authority and Ag BMP program. All right, so I have a PowerPoint today. It's going to be easier if I just share my screen, Nancy. Or do you have it on there? Okay.
It's up.
All right. Okay, we can move along. I'll try to get through this pretty quickly here for you so we have some time for questions still. So.
Okay.
So. Okay. One of the things the Rural Finance Authority does is we administer the Beginning Farmer Tax Credit, which is on the second slide. So this was signed into law by Governor Dayton back in May 30th of 2018, began January 1st of 18. It's very similar to some programs that Iowa and Nebraska has, but Minnesota was the first state to include the sale of ag assets as part of the program. Next slide. So kind of the main way this works here is it's a tax credit against taxes due for the state of Minnesota. So if somebody is selling some assets to a beginning farmer, they can claim up to 5% of the sale price or fair market value up to a maximum of $32,000. They can do, or they could do 10% of the gross rental income in up to first 3 years of the rental agreement up to a maximum of $7,000 a year, or 15% of cash equivalent of the gross rental income in each of the first, second, and third years of a share rent agreement up to a maximum of $10,000 a year. Slide. Some definitions. Agricultural asset includes agricultural land, livestock, facilities, buildings, and machinery. An owner of agricultural asset is an individual, a trust, or a pass-through entity. They can't be a C corp or an equipment or livestock dealer. So some of the, for the beginning farmer to qualify, they have to be a resident, farm less than 10 years based on their Schedule F. Obviously, the land needs to be in Minnesota. The asset owner cannot be a direct family. It can get kind of the closest relation they're allowed to have is like aunt and uncle or further removed. They have to have a net worth below $851,000 and do a majority of the farm labor and management and must agree to enroll for farm financial management. Next slide. So steps to apply is pretty easy. We have a, basically a three-page application on our website. You know, most people can fill everything of it out and off the top of their head. So it's pretty quick. That both the beginning farmer and the asset owner have to complete separate applications. Once they submit that and any ancillary documentation we might need, we'll issue a tax credit at the end of January of the following year for the previous tax year. Slide. So the funding for this, so tax year 2018 was capped at $5 million, and then the remaining tax years 2019 through 23, $6 million gets added. So for 2021, there's about $15.3 million available in this program as any unused amounts roll forward. So we're well funded for what we will likely see applications for. So kind of an idea of what we've done here. You know, kind of after that first year and the word got out, it's been pretty close the last 2 years. So, you know, we're doing somewhere, you know, between 2.3 and 2.7 million in credits to asset owners and, you know, something in the 500 range for the beginning farmers to cover educational costs. So how does the educational cost work? Beginning farmer gets a tax credit for participating in an approved farm financial management program. It's equal to 100% of their cost, not to exceed $1,500 a year. They can use this for up to 3 years, and it can also be used in conjunction with the beginning farmer farm business management scholarship. Okay, I am now going to move on to the loan programs we have available to farmers in Minnesota. So a little bit of RFA history. Rural Finance Authority was established in 1986 with the Restructure Loan Program. I won't read through all these as we'll be kind of getting into some of these in more detail here, but kind of listing of the different programs as they became available. Go to the next slide. So purpose of RFA and main audience, we want to provide Minnesota farmers affordable financing under terms and conditions not necessarily available from other credit sources. So we target beginning farmers, livestock producers, farmers facing financial adversity, you know, really all farmers. Kind of the idea is, though, that we're looking to do, you know, people that either are or aspire to be full-time farmers, where a majority of their income comes from farming. So not so much hobby farmers, but goals. We want to help Minnesota farmers, help local institutions be competitive. We provide lower interest rates. We share risk with the local banks, and it allows them to sometimes in some cases manage local lending limits. We are easy to use, prompt approval process. Normally, if a bank sends us a package in, we can approve it within 3 days. And we utilize most of the local lenders supporting documentation, so we don't have the farmer sending the same stuff twice. How are we funded? So we have two different mechanisms of funding. So we have the state sale of bonds. So last session here, we got $50 million of appropriation approved in order to fund our beginning farmer and seller assisted agricultural improvement, livestock expansion, restructure loans. There is some kind of side money for Aggie bond, which are federal tax exempt bonds. We don't do a ton of those, maybe one every other year. And we also do have a dedicated revolving account. And in those cases, the repayments go right back into the program and we can relend them. So we'll get into some of these individual ones here. Just some general performance measures since the beginning of the program, 86 to 20, end of fiscal year 2020, 3,385 loans have been issued to Minnesota farmers for $302 million. We've taken losses on only 21 loans for a 0.002% loss ratio. We currently in our pipeline have 703 active loans with a balance of just under $100 million. So how do we work? So we participate with local lenders. We take 45% of the overall loan up to certain limits. The local lender, like I mentioned, does most of the paperwork, and kind of the lender will close it out, the entire loan, and then we buy our 45% from them after the loan closes. The borrower pays the lender, and the lender pays us. We do have a 5-year prepayment penalty. Okay, steps in applying. It's pretty, we have a simple application again on our website. There's only a $50 application fee, so it's pretty inexpensive for farmers to apply. We process, approve the loan, send the approval letter. The lender closes loan, sends documents and mortgage to the RFA, and then the RFA sends out the participation funds and amortization schedule. So, did we lose some? Ah, there we go. Took a second to load. So our most popular program as far as number of loans we do are beginning farmer loans. So this helps beginning entry-level farmers purchase real estate. It can be bare land, farm site, 5 acres with a barn, net worth 851. Again, we are 45% for 400,000. But we do carry a maximum debt per acre of $3,500 an acre for the part we finance. Beginning farmer loan is down at 2% interest rate. We were able to secure funds at a pretty competitive rate here last August. So we passed that good rate along to the farmers. They can use the program more than once. This program requires they enroll in Farm Business Management and obtain life insurance to cover the loan amount. So kind of give you a little more graphic example of how this works. So say somebody was buying a piece of property for $200,000. So they might be putting, say, $40,000 down. So the remaining credit needed is $160,000. In this case, the RFA takes 45% of the remaining amount. So that's $72,000. The lender would take $88,000. And then if you look at our interest rates, ours is at 2%. You know, the lenders, you know, maybe it's at something like 4.5-ish. Right now, and then we share first as far as security on the loan. And if you kind of blend that interest rate, that's where the farmer can save money, you know. So I mean, on something like this, you know, they're maybe paying a little over you know, maybe 3% as compared to if they financed it all with the lender, they'd be paying 4.5 on the whole thing. So the RFA also works with the FSA on many of our loans, especially when it comes to the beginning farmers. So FSA agrees to waive the 1% origination fee when we work with them. They'll often issue guarantees up to 95%. We will, normally our loans will balloon at 10 years, but we'll go out to 20 if we're working with the FSA with beginning farmers. So the next slide gives you a little bit of example of how this structured financing might work here. So if they were buying a $475,000, you know, piece of property, they might borrow $225,000 from the FSA at 1.5%, and the FSA will automatically go into second security position. That leaves about $250,000 in credit needed. RFA takes 45%, $112,500, lenders 55%, $137,500. Our rate's 2%, the lenders maybe at 5%. Again, we share the first. If you blend those interest rates, you know, you're maybe coming in somewhere again in the low 3% for the whole thing. So considerably better cash flow situation for the beginning farmer. Okay, on the next few here, I'll just kind of talk about what the loans are, and I won't read too much into the how it works. You can kind of read that. It's all very similar. But so agricultural improvement loan is used to finance improvements to the farm for any ag-related purpose, such as livestock buildings, grain handling facilities, machine storage, and manure systems. Move on. Livestock expansion loan creates affordable financing for new state-of-the-art livestock production facilities. So a lot of times we'll see new hog barns, poultry barns, cattle barns, robotic milkers. We do have a little bit higher net worth on that program, as well as the restructure of $1.8 million. Okay, restructure. So this loan program here helps farmers restructure loans, reorganize their farm debt to improve cash flow. Again, it carries a little bit of a higher net worth, also has a little bit higher loan amount, but still a very competitive interest rate. Now we move into the revolving funds. So these are the ones where, as it's paid back, we can go ahead and relend this money out. So one that's been used quite a bit lately here, disaster recovery loan. So it would need to be a state or federal declared disaster or disaster areas determined by the Rural Finance Authority Board. It helps farmers affected by recent disasters for farm expenses not covered by insurance. Can be used to help clean up, replace feedstock and other inputs or repair buildings, be used to purchase watering systems during a drought disaster, and more recently we've added ability to cover the loss of revenue when there's a contagious disease, whether it be animal or human related, and the human one being the COVID, of course. So again, we participated 45%. This program here has got a pretty good deal on it, though, is we offer these funds at 0%. And we do not require a payment in the first 2 years. So this allows, you know, a farmer that is experiencing a disaster, a little bit of a break on the loan here so they can kind of get back up and running. We do not require have a maximum net worth, and we can be a little more flexible with the collateral. So since the inception of the disaster recovery program, there's been 57 loans for $3.7 million. Somewhat recently here in the last, you know, 6-8 months, we've done six loans for $860,000 due to cover loss of revenue to COVID. So, you know, I said we kind of got that one added there the last session, and it's gotten some use off that. So that's great. We also have expanded kind of the hazards over the last few years, kind of every year we kind of were adding a few things here to make it more expansive and really, you know, serve the farmers better. We also have a livestock equipment loan that helps beginning farmers purchase livestock related equipment, facilities improvement. We have another slightly different net worth on this one here, around 484. It is indexed for inflation every year, 45%. Again, participation, 2% interest rate on that. The caveat is they must be the principal owner of the livestock for which the equipment's being used. So they can't be like somebody doing work for somebody else. Farmer Opportunity Loan is used to purchase machinery or equipment to add value to crops or livestock, adopt best management practices, reduce or improve management of ag inputs, or increase production of on-farm energy. No max net worth on this. Again, it's a participation loan, 2%. Value added agricultural product program. This program was designed to provide financing for farmers with limited capital who want to buy stock in a cooperative proposing to build or purchase and operate an agricultural product processing facility in Minnesota. Methane digester program to help finance purchase of necessary equipment and the construction of a system that will utilize manure to produce electricity. Just kind of some odds and ends on that. Prepayment penalties start at 10% and then reduce 2% a year. I think I mentioned we had a five-year prepayment penalty. They can pay some added principal every year, and most spread loans have a 10-year maximum term on them. However, we can amortize them for longer than they just balloon. Okay, we now move on to the Agricultural Best Management Practices Loan Program. We just call that AGBMP because it's kind of long. So basically the program looks to local water quality improvements, whether it's addressing pollution problems, drinking water standards, or odor. We work with local governments and water resource managers, local lenders, and local borrowers. So under this program, the term, the maximum is $200,000 for any person at a given time. This also a 10-year program. So the AGBMP program lends this money at 0%. So what we do is we lend that money actually to the lender, and then the lender can turn around and charge the borrower a maximum of 3% interest rate plus any customary fees. So this program has had a 100% repayment rate, and we've never lost a dollar. So kind of the way this works, again, this is a loan, not a grant. So it's always repaid using revolving funds. So the borrower identifies a project. They might go to a local lender or local government unit. Sometimes those are one and the same. And then they come to AgBNP to get the money to complete the project. So who does what? Generally speaking, the local government unit approves the effective project. The local government units are given a budget so they can decide which projects they want to do. We don't decide for them. The lender, in which, you know, they evaluate the credit worthiness of the borrower. Again, we do have some LGUs that are also the lender. Department of Agriculture manages the funds in the contract, and the borrower implements the project and repays the loan. So a lot of what we do here has to do with water quality. We use science and environmental benefits. We ask the questions, does a given project address a water quality problem, a drinking water standard, or some kind of odor problem? Our borrowers can be farmers, farm supply businesses, rural landowners, water quality cooperatives, or anyone that wants to complete a septic project, we can lend on. This is kind of a list of some different practices. I'm not going to read through these. Might be a little bit hard to read, but we don't have an absolute set list of things we can or can't do. We always just ask the questions, and if it fits within what we're trying to do, then the project would be approved. So kind of an overview, we have done 18 million, we have 18 million, $83 million total in the corpus of our account that revolves, like I mentioned. We've turned that $83 million into over $290 million worth of loans. Like I say, never lost any money, so it is a very effective program. Total loans we've done through the program have been a little over 17,000. So just kind of some activity by calendar year. As you see, it's kind of floating around, kind of in the, 10 to 15 million range for most of the years. We've seen a significant pickup over the last few years, doing almost 26 million worth of loans in 2019. At this point, you'll notice kind of a bit of a drop off in fiscal year 2020, and that's because we have a lot of our funds lent out, and we just have to wait for them to be repaid in order to relend them. So activity since 1995, quite a bit of ag waste type projects, about 34%, 100 million. Tillage pretty close as well, 35%, a little over 102 million. Erosion projects, about 8 million, 3%. Quite a bit of pickup on those with the buffer law is kind of what kind of kick-started the erosion ones. Septics, still a pretty good chunk, 23% at 67 million, and then some other, other random ones cover the remainder. So available to lend in 2021, we have just a little bit under 24 million, and what that is that's a projected amount. It's our cash on hand plus all the repayments we expect to get this year. So it's about the same as 2020. There can be some lag, as far as when projects get completed, especially if you're talking about some larger feedlot type things. They don't get done overnight and not necessarily on schedule, but they eventually do get done. But we did have 2020, in fiscal year 2020, we had projects that the local government units wanted to do. Was 41 million in requests. So obviously we couldn't honor all the requests we had for the money. Breaking down what we did in fiscal year 2020 to give you an idea what's been going on in the most recent year. Ag waste 41%, tillage 20%, so a little bit down on that. Still a chunk of money for erosion, again, not quite as much. Septics have been up pretty high. And then a lot of our other, which, there's probably been quite a bit of wells in that other category here in the last year. that completes my presentation. So I am ready for any questions.
Sorry about that. To the committee, any questions for Mr. McDivitt? Samantha Vang, Representative Vang, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. McDivitt, for your presentation. I see that the Rural Finance Authority is a great resource for farmers. I'm interested to know more about the Beginning Farmers Tax Credit to see if you guys have disaggregated data on who's using it. Whether the data disaggregated from race, ethnicity, age, and gender.
Mr. McDivitt.
Yes, Representative. Sorry, Representative Bang. We don't. We're not really allowed to ask those types of questions, so we can't put them on the application forms. So it is open to everybody, and we do talk with Latino Economic Development Corporation and things of that nature. So we do make our project as widely known as we can, and provide those tax credits as applicable.
Any follow up, Representative Vang?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
I wonder if there would be another way to determine the ethnicity of the people taking those loans. Is there any support organizations that refer people to the program? Mr. McDivitt.
Chair Sundin, they're very well maybe. We generally wouldn't necessarily know about it. They might just kind of be helping them out on the side or just pointing them in the direction of our webpage where our applications reside.
Okay. Thank you. You know, it's a kind of a precious program for beginning farmers, and it'd be nice to know who's taking advantage of it right now. So any further questions for Mr. McDivitt? Representative Anderson, please. You are still muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McDivitt, thanks for your presentation.
We'll catch on someday.
Give me a few years, yeah. Interested, you mentioned you processed six loans, pretty good size loans, for COVID losses this past year. Interested in knowing what types of operations applied for that and which ones received those loans. Livestock, crop, what type of agriculture ventures were they?
Mr. McDivitt.
Yes, Representative Anderson. You know, it's hard to say, you know, like that there's any sort of type necessarily with there only being, you know, so few. It was kind of a mix. A lot of, you know, kind of diversified operations. So, you know, they were doing a different thing, you know, between crops and livestock, or, you know, we had one that, you know, somebody was a little bit more kind of on the value added side of things. You know, like I say, it's kind of a small number to say that there's a theme.
Follow up, Representative Anderson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just a quick follow up. Being there were only six, were you surprised there were not more applications, or was six all you had funding available for? Talk about that.
Mr. McDivitt.
Yeah, Representative Anderson. We did have, it wasn't a funding shortage, it was just those are the applications we got. You know, there were some federal programs that did some of the same things, and some people use a lot of that kind of stuff instead of this. So I don't think we turned any down that we got. So.
Okay. Is that it, Representative Anderson?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. McDivitt, and thank you, committee. That concludes our business for the day, and we'll see you next time. We stand adjourned.